Blog Talk Radio.
The views and opinions of this show do not reflect the views and opinions of Wikicuriosity Media or its affiliates. Wikicuriosity Media, changing the world you listen to. Any music featured on Wikicuriosity Media Progress is used with the express written consent of the artist, owner, or distributor. Coming to you live from the Wikicuriosity Studios in Knoxville, Tennessee, it's Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Cinephiles. I am Dan.
I am Alex.
And you are always welcome to join us in the studio. All you got to do is hit us up, 718-664-9735. Again, 718-664-9735. That brings you directly into the studio with us. You can also hit us up on Twitch. We are streaming live right now at Wicked Curiosity Media. You can always find us on Facebook at Wicked Curiosity Media and on Behind the Screen. Just type those in. Click on the like and follow button. Also hit that share button. So you can tell all your friends about us. We also have a website. The website is on all of the pages, www.wikicuriosity.wixsite.com/WC Media. You can find all of our archived shows at blogtalkradio.com/wikicuriositymedia. You can also find them on iTunes at Wikicuriosity Media. And we have a YouTube channel, funny enough, called Wikicuriosity Media. I think that's it.
Yep, I believe so.
All right, so it is another fantastic Wednesday night. Anything interesting this week for you?
I finished one of my favorite shows of all time, Peaky Blinders.
Cool.
Finished that up. Waiting for the new season to come out. This spring, I believe it's supposed to come out. Other than that, I'm just planning, I guess. Planning out some stuff. So...
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I finished up Peacemaker last week. It's definitely an interesting show. Alex, I implore you to watch it, if nothing else, for the comedy.
I've gotten all the spoilers.
It's fine to have all the spoilers, but you've got to get, like, you got to watch it for the comedy. Like, honestly. The comedy of the show within the context of the show. You know?
Yeah, I am going to watch it for validation, to solidify some of my suspicions about it.
Okay.
And to, yeah, basically... to confirm my suspicions about the show and about DC's future.
Okay. Makes sense. And I also watched or finished watching. Actually, I think I started it last week too. Reacher. The show on Amazon Prime. that falls more in line with what the book is supposed to be about than what the movies were. I'll be honest, never saw the movies. Not a huge fan of Tom Cruise. If you're a fan of the show, you know that I'm not a big fan of Tom Cruise. But I did watch the show Reacher. It has... Oh, God, I'm going to have to look up his name. Give me a second. Alan Ritchson, who also starred as Hawk in the show Titans. So, yeah, he plays Jack Reacher. And I'll tell you this, he is absolutely perfect for that role. But he was funny as hell in this movie, or in the show. It was really good, and he added to it. So I was impressed. I'm hoping they make a season two.
Something exciting did happen. Something I never thought would happen. And I'm kind of still in shock.
You won the lottery.
This is bigger than the lottery.
Okay.
My parents here, as old-fashioned as they are, got rid of cable TV.
No way. Did they finally?
No more cable boxes in this house. They said, hey, we don't watch shit on there. And it's stupid expensive. I was like, oh, well, yeah, I've told you this. And they're like, yeah, we're getting rid of it. I was like, no shit.
Nice.
So they don't have them all. They're still getting into that. But they got the ones that they wanted, the streaming services that they wanted.
Right.
So, hallelujah.
And if they still want to watch live TV, they can, you know, they can upgrade to Hulu Live.
Yeah. But they've come this far. I won't push it anymore.
I don't blame you. It was tough when because I had satellite. I had DirecTV for a long time. And it was a difficult thing for me to do.
Not
just
for me.
Because you're a little different. You're a little different.
I cut the whole DirecTV, satellite TV. I cut that out when I was like 9. It's like, hey, I'm not watching shit on here. And anything that I want to watch, I could just Google into YouTube, type it into YouTube.
Right.
So, boom, it's there. And then streaming platforms came out, and I matured. I upgraded. And, yeah.
See, I'm a little bit old school. I still like having like local channels and stuff. And I know that they have like digital antennas and stuff like that. That's just like, kind of a pain in the ass, honestly. And I tried that for a little bit, and I didn't like that. But I still like having live TV, which is why I have Hulu Live. I pay for Hulu Live. That way, you know, like, especially during football season, I can watch football. And there are times when, you know, I will watch the news, and it'll be local news and stuff like that. So,
I believe, I could be wrong. One of my buddies got Peacock recently, and he's able to watch football games on there. He likes to watch, motocross.
Mm-hmm.
NASCAR's on there. Like, all the motorsports are on there. You can watch football on there.
So,
you
know,
streaming service. So, what I'm noticing is, like, streaming services are becoming satellite TV, but you, like, there's no airtime, you know?
Right.
That's the only difference is there's no airtime, And once something's uploaded on there, you just click it and watch it. You don't have to wait for a commercial. You don't have to wait for, oh, 8 o'clock is when my shows come on. No, it's uploaded at a certain time on a certain day, and then you got it forever, basically.
Right. And that's the thing that I like about streaming services, is that you can do that. But for, like, live sports events, they stream on, usually, like, football will stream on all four live channels, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, sometimes ESPN. And that's the main reason, not the main reason, but that's one of the reasons why I got Hulu Live. You know, I do like to watch, you know, live TV every once in a while. There are certain shows that I watch live. Every once in a while, I'll watch Good Morning America when they aren't being, you know, part of The View. But I don't know. For it's difficult for me simply because that's all I've known basically my entire life was live TV. You know, I love having the streaming services because I love being able to binge TV shows. Over the past 2 days, I binged, you know, the entire 32nd season of The Simpsons up until the point of, you know, where they are. But there's just something about live TV, and I always put like live TV on when I go to bed because I listen to because I watch TV when I go to bed. There's, for me, there's something comforting about having, like, commercials and live TV and stuff like that, even if it's a pre-recorded program, just being able to listen to it when I go to bed.
See, I like to have stuff on when I sleep, too. I'm one of those people. I fall asleep to gun reviews. That's literally what I do.
I fall asleep to cooking shows, so, I mean...
There's one guy that I watch, and I just throw one of his stuff on, and boom, I'm falling asleep while someone is breaking down a Glock or a M17. They're just, now this is how the trigger pulls, and this is, I'm like, okay, cool, pass out. and then we go to the range, and my mom's like, so how do you know how to, like, do this kind of stuff? I'm like, you know, fall asleep to it every night.
I fall asleep to, you know, cooking shows and sometimes Big Bang Theory. But yeah, I get it, you know. So, I don't know.
That's something I learned this week. Not to cut you off, but it just blooped into my head.
Okay.
Whatever your stance is on gun rights, I don't care. I was taught how to break down an AR-15 this week.
Nice.
Straight down. Well, I didn't have 5,000 parts laying in front of me. We didn't go that far because it was just unnecessary. But we did basically the whole upper receiver, took it apart.
Okay.
Down to the bone.
Spring out?
Which spring? Because there's like 5,000 of them.
The spring in the buttstock.
Yes, he showed me how to do that. Okay. You got to press it in, and there's like this little thing. You press that in, and it bloops out.
Yeah.
But yeah, we everything down and cleaned it and very thoroughly cleaned it. And I was like, that's kind of a pain in the ass, but I get it. Put it back together a few times, took it apart a few times. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't too difficult. It was like, I thought it was going to be more difficult at first because of the videos I watch. I'm not actually doing it. But then whenever you actually do it, it's like, oh, okay. See, I knew like the first two steps because
right.
of just seeing people do it for years on YouTube. But the actual technical part of taking, you got to twist this thing, pull it out, and then you got to pull this out, and then you got to, yeah. It was very intuitive and very interesting to me. So knowing that information, I then took apart our pistols. so my mom had to do it. She's not technically inclined like that with firearms. So I showed her how to do it. We have two different platforms in our house with the pistols, 1911 platform, Glock platform. They're both very simple.
Yeah.
It's literally just like you could take them apart in like 2 seconds. You just boop, and it's apart. That doesn't make them dangerous at all. That just makes it easier to clean. But yeah, so naturally we took all the guns apart and cleaned them all, put them back together. It's very fun. I enjoy doing that.
So let me ask you this then, and you can stop me if we talked about this last week because I don't remember, because I know I talked on Falling from Grace last week.
Mm-hmm.
I was on with Miss Angel. No, it wasn't last week. It was the week before. I was on last week, but the topic I'm thinking about was the week before.
Okay.
So when you have a pistol,
mm-hmm.
and you're getting ready to clean it,
mm-hmm.
what is the very first thing that you do?
Clear it, make sure it's empty.
Right. And how do you clear it? How do you normally clear it?
I was taught the 1-2-3 check. Pull the slide back, look at the, not down the barrel, but when you're pointing the barrel away from you, you look inside the chamber that way, then you look inside the chamber that's closest to you, and then you look in the magwell, and you can stick your fingers around in there. Yeah, just make sure it's clean safely.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, drop the magazine.
Yeah.
Right. And then pull the slide back, check the barrel, check the magazine well, make sure that there's absolutely no ammunition in there, right?
Yeah, I freaked out the other day because my mom emptied her magazine, and I saw an orange dot at the bottom. I was like, we're finding this bullet. I don't know where I was at. I checked her gun. I checked her other gun. I checked stepdad's gun. I checked every 9mm that we had. Couldn't find it. Come to find out, that's just how much he loaded in there because we ran out. I was like, oh, okay. So I thought we had a bullet astray, and we were going to blow our hand off cleaning the gun. False alarm. So
you were overcautious.
A little bit. I just didn't know where it went. I didn't want it to be stuck in somewhere, and us not knowing, and then us going to take something apart and it go off or something. I was just double checking everything to make sure it was clear, clean, and safe.
Okay, that makes 100% sense. So when I do it, I do a similar method. You know, when I bring my gun out, first thing I do, if I'm not going to use it, obviously, is I drop the magazine, slide the upper receiver to the rear, you know, slide the slide to the rear and lock it, check down the barrel, up the barrel, and then the magazine well. And
just for the folks at home, when we say check the barrel, we are not pointing the barrel. We're not pointing the gun at ourselves, okay?
No.
The way you can look at the barrel with pistols, get over it, you're fine.
Yeah. Normally, mine is...
Is it clear?
No, I don't do that. God.
They can't see what I just did, but...
No. They can probably get them... Those that have handled a weapon before know exactly what you're talking about. I normally point mine at my bed. Like, it's almost point blank at the bed because the mattress is going to stop the round.
Yeah.
For the most part. And I always point it towards the outside of the house. So if it goes through a wall, it's going through my mattress, through the wall, into the ground outside. But generally, my rounds don't have that much packed into them. They're not that powerful. Normally, they're going to stop at the mattress. So the reason why I say this, and you're going to cringe at this, is Miss Angel was on the phone with a friend of hers a couple weeks ago. And they were Miss Angel's friend, we'll call her Jay.
Okay.
Jay and her husband were cleaning their 9mm outside. Well, I guess Jay's husband is a fucking idiot. And the gun went off. And the round landed about, probably about 2 feet away from Jay's daughter.
Mm.
Yeah. So after the conversation, and Jay acted like it was just, oh, you know, he almost killed my daughter. He was cleaning his gun and it went off, blah, blah, blah.
Here's the thing about modern pistols. The older pistols, different. Modern pistols will never go off without a trigger pull. Never.
Right.
Never,
right.
Ever will they ever go off without a trigger being pulled.
And that's something I told Miss Angel. So, number one, you should never, ever, ever, ever have your finger in the trigger well unless you intend to fire the weapon.
With exceptions of certain guns, the trigger has to be disengaged before you can take it apart.
Right. That's different.
That's different. But at that point, the gun should be clear. Okay, it should just be a hunk of metal sitting on a table.
Right.
If you're not sure if it's clear or not, a finger shouldn't be on the trigger or even in the trigger.
The trigger well.
It should be there. You should be pointing. Not, I forget what they called it. I said that had a funny saying.
Keep your booger hook off the bang button.
Yeah. Yeah, just keep it off there. Unless you absolutely have to.
Yeah. Like, and this is something, because I've, you know, Miss Angel has not been to the range with me yet. She's not comfortable yet. But I have had her hold my pistol in the house. And I double cleared it. And I made her double clear it before I even handed her the pistol. Like, I took the magazine well out, locked the slide to the rear, looked down, looked in, showed her how to do that, and then, you know, slid the slide forward, and then had her pull it back and lock it and check. That way she, you know, and then had her hold the weapon and stuff like that, put an empty magazine in there just so she can get the feel of it, stuff like that. But that just blew my mind. And we were talking later, and she looked me directly in the eye, and she said, if that ever happened at the house, if that ever happened, you would be done. Like, there would be no coming back from that at all.
Yeah. Unless there's, like, a serious malfunction from the factory with the firearm, a gun accident is 100% preventable.
Yeah.
And should be prevented.
Well,
even
if there is a manufacturer's defect, weapon should never be pointed up.
The weapon wouldn't work anyhow. If there was a manufacturer issue, like if the gun was loaded, whatever, you go and it accidentally goes off, if there's a manufacturer defect, it's not going to work, because guns are made in a certain way to where they have to work.
It's either going to go off.
You can't take one part out of a gun or move it ever so slightly in a gun. It's not going to work after that. Like, that's
right.
Not how a gun works.
And a lot of the time, you can't take one part from one gun and put it in another and have it work.
Yeah. So a gun accident is 100% preventable.
Yeah.
Should be prevented. Also, you shouldn't just be focused on the gun when you're doing gun safety. The dangerous part is not what's laying in front of you. The dangerous part is what's out there, is what the gun is pointed at. So you need to know where it's at. You need to know where people are. You need to know your surroundings. You need to know where things are at.
Even if that gun is unloaded, and you know it's unloaded.
Yeah, and that's
nobody should ever walk in.
Course, but this is the exact problem with the Alec Baldwin situation. Whether he knew the gun was loaded, he should have checked it. Whatever. It shouldn't have been pointed at somebody. It's still a gun.
Yeah.
So the thing is
for me is I have a pistol and a rifle. I keep a magazine in both of them. I don't chamber a round because it literally takes 2 seconds to chamber a round. You know, if I need to chamber a round, it literally takes 2 seconds for me to chamber a round on either my pistol or my rifle. And even when I grab it, like if I'm going to the range, obviously, you know, when I grab it, I eject the magazine, I pull the slide back, and I make sure that it's empty, let the slide go forward, and then put the magazine back in. Unless I'm at the range and, you know, my gun is pointed downrange. I don't understand. I have never, ever, ever understood the concept behind an accidental shooting or anything like that. The Army changed the vernacular from accidental discharge to negligent discharge because that's exactly what it is. It's negligent. You are not being safe around that weapon. Weapons, pistols and rifles are extremely safe if you know how to use them. It's like a knife. I'm not going to take out my knife, flip open the blade, and pretend to stab somebody because you never know. It's the same concept.
Yeah. I mean, they're engineered specifically not to go off. You have to make it go off. You are the thing that makes the gun go pow.
Yeah.
A gun isn't just going to sit there, or you're just not going to be holding a gun and it, but you just willy-nilly and it go pow. Oh no, it was an accident. I get it. You didn't mean to do it.
Yeah.
It's not an accident. It was you were being
it's
stupid.
It's negligence. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like that saying, you know, guns don't kill people. People kill people.
Yeah.
You know, I've had
all in all, they're just tools, really.
They are.
Whatever you want to use a tool for. They are just high velocity tools and dangerous. We were at the range and my mom was a bit confused because she doesn't do the pre stuff with the firearms that me and my stepdad do. I loaded all the magazines when we went to the range, preloaded all the magazines.
Okay.
And she's been around hunting rifles and whatnot, and she saw our 5.56.
Mm-hmm.
And then she saw the 9mm. She goes, "Alex," I was like, "What's up?" She goes, "What's the big deal with the AR? Like, why is it so, like, scary and, like, not really scary, but why is it so, is what it is?"
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. And well, I said, "Well, you take a look here, Mom. This is very, very spicy." This is going so freaking fast, it's not even funny. Your 9mm there, it's still going fast. It's not going as fast. And if you ever see a jet break the speed barrier, you see that little cone around it? That's basically a solid. When you get hit with something going so fast, like a 5.56, you see a little hole. But the internal damage of it is all kinds of crazy. You can have up to a baseball-sized hole in your chest, and you not even see it. That's what makes that rifle rounds scary. I told her that, and she goes, oh, okay. I said, well, the 9mm is still doing that, but it's just in a smaller package, so it can be in a, you know, 8-inch little handheld cannon. But yeah, I mean, I had to explain that it's just very spicy is what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
It's going super fast.
The 5.56 is a Ferrari.
That's what makes it deadly.
9mm is a WRX, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you've got the Bear, which is a Bugatti.
Goddamn jet. I'm going to link you a video after this about a Barrett, about
okay.
the sheer force of a Barrett. Two videos, actually.
Okay. So I've got two more things before we go to break. So, and I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry.
I'm good.
So one of them is, so I took Miss Angel out on a date last Friday. We went and ate at Red Robin. Loved their hamburgers. And then we went to the theaters and saw The Cursed. It was decent enough. I wish I would have seen Uncharted.
No, you don't. My buddies went and saw Uncharted and said it was one of the most boring movies of all time.
Really?
They said it was super long and boring, and the action scenes weren't up to par. But then again, they have some shitty movie opinions, so do that what you will.
Well, because the producer went and saw it, and he said it was good.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a good movie, but a lot of people, it didn't live up to certain expectations, and there was just certain things that they should have done, and I kind of agree with that. But either way,
Dunkirk. Okay. And then the second one is, so March 3rd is coming up, next week, I believe.
Yes.
It is next Thursday. And I have tickets.
I can only guess to what?
I'll let you take a wild guess.
I don't know. Is it Batman?
Yes, it is. Yep, I'm going to go see Batman next Thursday. So I figured you'd probably go see it next Friday or Saturday.
I'll probably see it sometime soon, yeah.
So, but yeah, got a message on my phone that said, hey, guess what? You know, early showing. And I was like, really? Here's two tickets. Yeah, so yeah.
I'm not too concerned with spoilers with the Batman. I mean, it can go different ways. It says starting off or a launching point for whatever is going to go on with this. I want to see it because I feel like it's going to be pure cinema joy. It's going to be the shots, that are, the way it's going to be edited, the action, the acting, that's what I want to see it for. I could honestly kind of care less about the story. I feel like the story's going to be super good anyway. I'm not too worried about it. I'm a massive Batman geek, so I feel like I'm going to be biased either way.
How about this? So Thursday. So my tickets are for 8 o'clock.
Okay.
Probably won't be done until about 10:30, 11. I'll text you when I'm done, and if you're awake, I'll call you and let you know how it was.
Okay.
I won't give you any spoilers because that's just not who I am. I'm not going to do that. That's just me. And I hate it when people do that to me. But I will definitely let you know how it is and how soon you need to go see it.
All righty.
So,
I'm definitely going to watch it sometime soon. But yeah.
All right. And on that note, we are going to take a small break. We'll be back right after this.
Behind the screen, we'll be right back.
strip it down, it's just you and me. You cut me off and say you're tired of talking. Not as if we can't agree, but you've lost your will to fight. You're packing up all your things to leave, and these will be our last words. Then the chance will be lost, and I ain't too proud. If you loved me, you would hold me and never let me go. If you loved me, you would tell me you never want me to be alone. If you cared at all, you would stop and never go. But you just turned your back to me and said, guess what?
Getting a little bit of feedback. There we go. That's a little better.
You got to mute your messenger.
I did, don't I? That was not my fault. That was on my side. I apologize for that. So many buttons I have to push just to bring us back from the live. All right, so tonight we are talking about, in my opinion, one of the most interesting TV series out there, simply because it's based off of an old 80s movie franchise. And
there's a problem.
What's going on?
There's a cock in my ass.
Okay. That was the producer. Moving on. So it's based on an old 80s movie franchise. The franchise was huge. You know, from the middle, because the first movie came out in 84. Okay. Tonight we're talking about Cobra Kai, the TV series on Netflix. Started out on YouTube Red, and Netflix picked it up. And so the very first movie came out in 84. And it was kind of honestly a big hit. The second one came out in 86, and then the third one came out in 89. We're not going to talk about the next Karate Kid because that was a stupid movie. And then, you know, of course, we had the remake with Will Smith's son and Jackie Chan, which failed miserably. But so Cobra Kai picks up, what, 30 years? 35 years? Almost 40?
Yeah, it takes place, like, as it does in real life.
Right.
So whatever the time from the first Karate Kid to Cobra Kai is, how long it took place.
Right. And we pick up, you know, with Johnny Lawrence and Daniel LaRusso. Daniel LaRusso is this big rich guy that owns a car dealership that deals pretty much exclusively in like high-end vehicles.
Yeah.
And then Johnny Lawrence, I don't even remember what he was working, what his job was.
He was like a handyman, basically. He did everything. He cleaned gutters, he fixed plumbing, he was hanging TVs on walls. He was just the do-it-all kind of guy. And then he got fired and then was like, well, shit, I have nothing else to do. Kicked three teenagers' asses and was like, I'm going to become a sensei.
Right.
So Johnny Lawrence is a sensei.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we start, I have to know, did you watch the movies?
I've seen the first one. I wasn't able to find the other two on the streaming platforms that I have. But
okay.
I still did my homework with cheating. I watched the Karate Kid timeline. Like what happened, the important moments, significant moments.
Okay.
I watched those, caught up, informed, and ready.
So now you know the significance of Terry Silver.
Yes.
Okay. Specifically from Karate Kid 3.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go back and we're going to go back to the beginning real quick. We're going to talk about the first Karate Kid movie. So these movies were my favorites when I was growing up.
I really liked the first one. Whenever I was little and, like, first watching it, I always thought it was cool. You know, we always made, like, kind of jokes about it. Like, wax on, wax off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always something that was cool. Yeah.
So growing up, I loved The Karate Kid. It was essentially, and supposed to be, the story of a kid that moves from the East Coast to the West Coast. And, you know, his struggles of being the new kid in the class and getting bullied and stuff like that. And, you know, then he meets Mr. Miyagi, learns karate, and, you know, wins the All-Valley Tournament, becomes the hero of the story. That's what it's supposed to portray. But there was a big movement, and this was pointed out in the TV show How I Met Your Mother. And I think it gained momentum from there. That Johnny Lawrence was the hero of that movie and that Daniel LaRusso was the bully.
I can sort of see that.
And it's an interesting take because if you look at it,
I don't necessarily think Johnny Lawrence was the villain. I don't think he ever was. I just think he was a conduit for the villain. If that makes sense. Like Kreese and Cobra Kai was always the bad guys.
Yes. Yeah.
And they just used Johnny Lawrence because a grown man can't hit a child, basically.
Right.
But apparently in this universe, that doesn't matter.
well, no, because Mr. Miyagi beat up teenagers. And then, you know.
The questionable child abuse that Cobra Kai uses.
okay. It's looking at it from your perspective, I get it. In the 80s, that was typical.
Well, even now, even in, like, the modern Cobra Kai, they're still using the same tactics.
Yeah.
Johnny Lawrence really wasn't, but when Kreese got involved, it started getting more into the less training kids for karate and for sport and more training soldiers for war.
Mm-hmm. And that's been Kreese's viewpoint all along. You can see that in 1 and 3. Is that he was one of those that couldn't let go of the Vietnam War. And we got a little bit more backstory of John Kreese in the war, which I'm not going to say humanizes him, but gives us a mildly different perspective on
gives us an explanation on why he is the way he is.
Right. It's not an excuse. It's an explanation.
Yeah.
So, because he should have sought help a long time ago.
I don't think there was anything that was going to help him. He was just one bad decision after another. And Cobra Kai didn't help him.
And that kind of led into Johnny Lawrence's adult life, too. You know, the abuse that Johnny suffered at the hands of not only John Kreese, but we've got a little bit of backstory on Johnny as well. His stepdad was abusive.
Yeah.
You know, which explains, you know, him lashing out and acting out as a child. Again, you know, you got to look at it. This is the 80s. This isn't an excuse, but that's how it was. And I'm glad things are different now, for the most part. But, you know, in the 80s, that's how it was. It was accepted.
Yeah.
You know, child abuse wasn't as reported or as prevalent a topic.
It wasn't really seen as abuse. It was
discipline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other forms. Sometimes they're not quite as effective, but when you got to hit something to make it work, that means something's real shitty.
Yeah.
You really have to hit it to make it work or make it listen. It's maybe time to try different tactics.
Yeah. And we know that now. And, you know, I would say that other generations past, like my parents' generation, have learned that, you know, maybe hitting children isn't the best way to go.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a fine line.
I won't say anything towards, like, a viewpoint, because I've had my ass smacked before pretty freaking hard. Did I do the thing that made me have my ass smacked? No. Did I do it again? No. So it worked. To me, it seems like every time a child gets his ass smacked or he's smacked in the head or something, it's out of anger. Like, you're pissing me off, shut up. Or you're being bad, boom, I don't want to deal with you, sort of thing. I'm not saying I was abused as a child. That's not what happened. I was disciplined. My parents never struck me. I think the statute of limitations is out on that anyway, so.
Great. I'm going to have cops showing up my door here in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, but, you know, there's other ways of going about it. Like you said, a little smack on the butt to get them, hey, grab their attention, like, hey, yeah, freaking stop.
Yeah, it's not.
But if you're throwing your fist back and giving them a black eye every other day, that's abuse. That's assault and battery.
Definitely abuse. Yeah, and I mean, there's different forms of abuse. There's, you know,
there's
physical.
There's people doing 5 years to life doing that to adults. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You kind of gotta weigh out your options when you do something.
And we all know there's different forms of abuse. There's verbal, mental, emotional, and, you know, sexual abuse.
I think
really,
Johnny got the ringer of it all. He got emotional, mental, physical. He got it all. And we kind of saw the repercussions of that in Cobra Kai. You know, he's single. He's getting up there in age. He's not old, but he's getting up there. And he doesn't got much going for him. In the show, and you know, he doesn't know how to parent right. You know, he's got a son. He doesn't know how to do shit with him. Doesn't know what to do because he was never taught the correct way to do stuff. And he gets a second chance with Miguel. And he kind of parents him in a different way. He's a sensei first, and then he slowly starts becoming that father figure. But yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah. One of the things that I like about the show Cobra Kai is that it's told from the viewpoint primarily from Johnny Lawrence. You know,
which is an interesting viewpoint, to say the least.
It is a very interesting viewpoint because Karate Kid is all told from the viewpoint of Daniel LaRusso, all three movies. And we don't get to see a lot of who Johnny Lawrence is. And at least for the first season, a lot of the stories center around Johnny and his life and his hatred for LaRusso. And, you know, we see a lot of that. And we're almost made to feel sorry for him.
I felt sorry for him, but I felt like his anger was misplaced with Daniel LaRusso. I don't think it was all Daniel's fault that his life was shitty.
No, I don't. You make your life to be what it is. You can't blame.
Yeah. Well, losing a tournament that means a lot to you is one thing, but to place all the blame of your opponent is a different thing. Because the person who messed up your life wasn't opponent; it was your teacher, or his teacher, and he kind of realizes that throughout the show that like. Yeah, Daniel Russo's kind of a dick sometimes, and, you know, Mr. Miyagi-Do, their whole philosophy he doesn't like because it's not badass. But he realizes that, you know, the problem wasn't with Daniel or Mr. Miyagi, it was with Kreese.
And he kind of has some self-revelations as well. You know, he kind of understands that, you know, he didn't go on the path that he should have, and that, you know, a lot of the decisions that he made in his life led him to where he is now.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a lot of growth for Johnny over the course of the three seasons that we've gotten so far.
Four
seasons, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, and the interesting thing about that, I thought the four seasons took place over, like, 2-3 years, maybe. I thought it was, like, a season per, like, a year in high school or whatever. No, it was literally a year from season one to season four is a little over a year.
Yeah.
Because season one starts off as they are just starting high school, like their first day of high school. And then they go through that, and the All Valley is at the end. So season one is a full year. Let me correct myself. Season one was a full year. Seasons two through four were another year. Because Miguel had his accident. That was him dealing with that through season three. And then...
That was season two.
Four, he, at the end of season two, he broke his back. That was the finale. And then season three was him coming out of it. Because we've only had two All Valleys in the whole series. Those the end of season one and end of season four. And those are yearly.
Yeah.
All this change that is happening in Johnny's life and all this change that's happening in Miguel and Daniel's life, it's all going quick, and it's all within 2 years.
Yeah.
It's just cool to see how people can grow in the show.
So while watching the show, like I said, in the movies, I really like Daniel LaRusso because he was always the underdog. He was always the one, quote unquote, being picked on and stuff like that, which kind of lends to how he is as an adult. He's now successful. He's got money. Obviously,
and you can't really be mad at him for that because he definitely worked for what he had.
Oh yeah.
You know, the money didn't come out of the blue for Daniel. He had a tree business, first of all, were a bad idea. Nobody wants a damn bonsai tree. We don't live in the Karate Kid world. Not very many people, like I said in the show, nobody wants a bonsai tree. But then he studied and he was into cars and he was like, hey, I'm going to start off small, and he worked his way up. I think calling Daniel a bad guy is kind of wrong. He's not a bad guy. In the show, he was, instigated. Or in the movie, he instigated. But that's just high school kids being high school kids instigating. It's not like he's going through life as an instigator poking the bear. I mean, yes, in recent episodes he was, or in recent seasons he was, but he wasn't being a dickhead about it. He just reacts off emotion.
So in the series, he kind of became a cocky asshole. I both like that aspect of the movie, of the TV show, of the series, but I also don't like that aspect. When I first watched Cobra Kai, I first started to see what they were doing with Daniel LaRusso. I was like, this is not who he was. This is not how
I like
him
it
growing up. Because
he gets cocky moments, and then he gets humbling moments too. It's a good balance. Because that's what Mr. Miyagi tells him and stuff. He's got to have balance. He's got to be, whatever.
Yeah.
But he has humbling moments. Like, he'll be cocky and be like, yeah, I took down Johnny Lawrence's dojo because I was being a dickhead. Oh, my car dealership's going under because I was being a dickhead? Yikes. And he comes back from that.
And I'm really glad that they did that for him because I didn't want to see Daniel LaRusso be this altruistic type person, because that's kind of what the movies were trying to portray him as in a way. They always portrayed him as the good guy, as the one that's always doing right, and everybody else around him was just picking on him and bullying him, and then he gets his, not revenge, but for lack of better terms, that's what it is. You know, he proves that he is the better person in the end. And Cobra Kai kind of brought him more, down to earth as this, you know, as this person who is not what we saw in the movies. You know, he's a real person. He is flawed. He can be a cocky asshole, especially when it comes to Johnny. And he just doesn't want to. He's got this very narrow viewed mindset on who Johnny is. You know, Johnny was the high school bully. Johnny was the asshole. And Johnny is in Daniel's eyes is a loser. And he's tired of the rivalry, and he just wants to be done with him. You know, but when that rivalry sparks back up, then it's, you know, well, I'm the better person. You know, and that's kind of the feeling that I got until roughly around season four is when, I think season three kind of humbled him a lot when he went back to Okinawa and met his quote-unquote rival in Okinawa. And his rival's like, you know, the bad guy, the rival from Karate Kid 2.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, I don't have any desire to fight you. I've kept Miyagi-Do going here. You know, I've kept the dojo going here. I've kept it up. I've made it, you know, and that was kind of, I think that was kind of humbling for him to see that this person that he was enemies with, you know, 40 years ago can now be his friend, mentor, and teacher.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's kind of where, that's kind of when Daniel started to kind of realize that the same can be done with Johnny.
Yeah, and I think Johnny's problems now lie outside of karate, outside of Cobra Kai. And that's the same thing with his son. His son was just using Cobra Kai as a outlet to get at his dad, and that didn't really make him feel any better. What was his name? Robbie. I think Robbie and Johnny are done with karate for this next season. I think they're going to be done, not done doing karate, but done competing with the karate. I think their main focus is then going to be finding Miguel. They've been set, or not set things, but the guy who plays Johnny has been posting pictures of him on set wearing an FBI shirt. As you can tell, it's not actually an FBI shirt. On the back of it, there's a stripper, and it says Federal Boob Inspector. and him and Robbie are wearing them looking for Miguel. Because Miguel went to Mexico to see his father at the end of season four. So they're looking for Miguel. And I think Robbie and Miguel can then become what Daniel and Johnny were. Or should have been. As friends, allies. They don't have to be buddies, but they can respect each other without wanting to rip each other's throat out. And I think with the combination, what my predictions, the combination of Robbie, Miguel possibly coming back, I think, I can't remember her name, the Cobra Kai girl, she's played by Peyton List.
Got it, hold on. Tori,
I think she, because she saw the manipulation at the end of season four with the tournament. They're all going to combine forces and try to take down Cobra Kai and Silver.
So do you think that Tori and Samantha will, because they have a rivalry going on right now.
They do, but I think because Tori and Samantha's mom, Daniel's wife, they are kind of close in a sense. And I think she'll be the one to be like, hey, what happened, happened. Get over it. It's the same thing with Johnny and Daniel. It wasn't Johnny doing the bullshit. It was Kreese. Kreese was the one that was like, you have to kill this kid. And Johnny was like, I just want to punch him in the face. I want to win. And he's like, no, you're going to kill him. It's like, okay, well, no. And I think most of the students, like Hawk, Robbie, and Tori, are realizing, like, Cobra Kai is ridiculous. Why would I want to fight in this? And they just see that it's all manipulation. Cobra Kai does not work. Cobra Kai is not working. They're a bunch of cheaters. They're violent. They're stupid. And I think, I don't know if it'll go under the banner of Miyagi-Do, but with Daniel's rival coming in at the end of season 4 to take down Cobra Kai, I think it'll be a war. You know, the friend of their friend is your enemy. Or the enemy of my, whatever that saying is. I think it'll be that.
Enemy of my enemy is my friend.
There we go. It'll be that situation. It'll be that sort of situation. Because Tori wanted to win fair. She clearly did not win fair. Cobra Kai is now her enemy, I guess. Samantha is pissed off at Cobra Kai and Tori. So the enemy of her enemy is going to have to be her friend. And then what happens after that happens.
So do you think Tori will come to Samantha and be like, hey, you should have won. This is what I saw.
It'll be an immediate thing, but I think it'll be like end of season 5, middle of season 5. She'll be like, she'll own up to it and be like, hey, this isn't cool. And then maybe season 6 will be the finale of the show when Cobra Kai dies. Maybe they'll do that season 5. I don't know. But the way I don't know how to pronounce his name. XOLO. The actor who plays Miguel. They kind of wrote him off because he's going to be in the new Blue Beetle movie. He's going to be playing Blue Beetle.
That's going to be awesome. I can see that.
It's going to be so awesome. I'm so excited for it. But he's going to be off doing that. So I'm assuming while he's filming Blue Beetle, that'll be when he's in Mexico looking for his dad.
Right.
So, yeah, I can kind of gauge where they're going to go with the next season. Or they could just blow my mind and do something different. Who knows? I don't know. But, yeah, I'm definitely excited. I'm glad to see Robbie and Johnny back together, seeing that they can build a relationship.
So, I've noticed that these movies obviously, or the series obviously, you know, follows with the movies pretty well. They reference a lot throughout the movies, even little things. They reference in the movies, and you know, little Easter eggs here and there from the movies that, you know, those of us that have seen the movies multiple times.
Do you think they'll reference the next Karate Kid? Do you think they'll bring her in season 5?
Oh God! Who is she?
She's like, hey, I was taught by Mr. Miyagi too. I can help you take down Cobra Kai. He's like, no, I got my Okinawan rival. I'm good. He literally made my arm start working. I'm good.
Yeah. He pretty much just made everything stop.
That was the coolest scene, by the way. Was when Daniel and Kreese fought at Cobra Kai. that was one of the most well-shot things in the show. Kind of surprised me. I thought it was badass. Johnny, the fight between Johnny Kreese and Daniel, and then that ending where Daniel does the same move where he's like, boom, boom, you got no arms. And he's like, come on, do it. Kill me. He's like, it's not that serious.
So, want to welcome Miss Angel to the show. We are talking about the Karate Kid movies and Cobra Kai, the TV series.
Okay.
So one of the things that I really, really liked about the TV series, like I said, was the little Easter eggs, the little cameos, and little things here and there that popped up. We got to see when Daniel went to Okinawa, they referenced a lot of Karate Kid 2, and just it was Karate 2.0. It was Karate Kid 2 2.0 is what it was for me. Karate Kid 2 was my favorite Karate Kid, just because it was, you know, it's a different culture, and it's Daniel being the outsider again, but really being the outsider. You know, I mean, he's not this person that comes from a different part of the country. He's this person that comes from a different part of the world into a whole new immersive and culture and environment.
Not to mention, he's not hot shit. They don't give a shit about Deep Valley Tournament over there.
Right.
They're like, okay, whatever. You Deep Valley, woo. I can kick your ass. Boom. And he gets his ass kicked.
You did karate for a tournament. We do karate as a way of life here. And it was really good to see. I gotta bring her. I gotta bring this up because I'm horrible with her name. Kimiko. Johnny or Daniel's quote-unquote love interest in Karate Kid 2. It was really good to see her again. And if I'm not mistaken, they brought all the original actors back.
I believe so, yeah.
And it was just really good to see the reunion, you know, because there had to have been excitement on set when that happened. You know, a lot of memories flooding back of filming Karate Kid 2, and seeing the reunion on the show of him reuniting with Kumiko. What was her name? Hold on, Kumiko. And then the part that got me in that season, I think that was season 3, if I'm not mistaken. The part that got me that really hit me kind of in the feels, honestly, was the girl that he rescued in Karate Kid 2. Seeing her come back and her recognizing Daniel, and him, you know, recognizing who she is. You know, when she says, "You saved me, you saved my life," you know, and he's like, "Oh my God, you know, it's you," you know, and it's the reunion. Because it's very rare that you get to see the reunion of, you know, a person in peril and then somebody saving their life, especially that far, you know, that much later.
Yeah.
Especially if, you know, you're overseas. And it was such an amazing moment within the series that I know that for all of us Gen Xers and all of us older people that watched the movies and love the movies, When we saw that moment on TV, it's like, holy crap, you know, it's that nostalgic moment. It's that, you know, we get to see her again. You know, they brought her back. She was such a, she played such a minuscule part in the movie, but she had such a deep impact, on the turning points in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of those turning points within the movie. I mean, her role was very minor.
Yeah.
But her impact, her scene had such an impact on that movie that when they brought it back for Cobra Kai, it had the same impact and the same turning point for the series, because after that, that's when he goes and visits his rival. They don't have his name. Chosen. I don't know how to pronounce that. Chozen.
I said it the second time.
Chosen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And he goes and meets him, and of course Daniel's a little nervous. But then, you know, he's like, that was me. I was a kid. I was stupid.
Quite literally said, I'm too old for this bullshit. Like, I'm over it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Johnny's riding on the heels of his, or on the tails of his rivalry with Johnny. So now he's going to go visit somebody else that he had a quote unquote rivalry with. And Chosen was just like, no, that was me. I was a kid. I was stupid. You were a kid. You were stupid. It's over. It's done. You've moved on with your life. I've moved on with my life. It's good to see you. I'm glad you're doing good. Let me show you some things, you know? And that was the moment that I have
been. My favorite part was when they were on the mat and they were fighting, and he Chosen totally knocked out all of Daniel's limbs, and Daniel's just laying there, and he had him in that position, and he was like, this is it. Honk, honk. Like, oh, Jesus Christ. I busted out laughing. He did that, and I was like, because he had this straight face, just like, I'm going to kill Daniel. Like,
yeah.
Throughout the whole episode. And to see him, honk, honk. I was like, oh, Jesus.
It's the same thing Daniel did to him in the second one, because that's what Mr. Miyagi did to Kreese at the beginning of Karate Kid 2. And that's what Daniel did to him at the end of Karate Kid 2, brought his hand down right at the nose and then went, hang. And then Chosen does that to Daniel, and then gets up and just starts busting up laughing. You know, and Daniel's like, what the fuck? That's when Chosen was like, I don't have a rivalry with you. This was just funny. You know? And I was just like, that was the fight that I was hoping for with Johnny and Daniel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Which we kind of got. Because they were both mad at each other in season 4. Because they merged their dojos, but they were just not clicking. And so they were like, you know what, we're going to fight. Johnny was like, we're going to fight. And he tweeted out with his one Twitter follower. He goes, how did it get out? He's only got one follower. But Miguel was showing everybody. But they were fighting, and it was all tied up. And they go for it. They both, and then they, boom. They both kick each other in the face, and they hit the mat at the same time. And it was, there's no winners or losers. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They were both equally matched. I saw a thing, though. The other day on just flipping through stuff, and it was a compilation of people doing that trick of taking out the arms, and it was Daniel couldn't defend himself against that. Kreese couldn't defend himself against that. Johnny did. Daniel took out Johnny's arm and stuff and was still able to tackle. He still got the point when they were fighting. So Johnny was able to defend against the Miyagi paralyzation thing. And it just shows Johnny's skill of being able to adapt. And, yeah, it just shows his seriousness with it. Like, he's not just doing karate anymore because it's badass. He's doing karate because it means something to him. That being said, one of my favorite parts of the entire show was Johnny's pure comedy. If it fit right in. So you don't want to be a bunch of pussies, do you? No. Just the names he gave people. What's up, Lip? He goes, can you not call me that? What's the matter, Lip? You don't want me to call you Lip? Do something about yourself.
I was born with it.
It was just funny. And it was the one scene where the kid was like, hey, only they get to call me Penis Breath. He goes, man, you shouldn't be okay with anybody calling you Penis Breath. It was just funny. That whole Johnny Lawrence is just funny. It's not awkward either, cringy. It's just boom. And it's funny.
It's right
you can't
on
argue that it's. You can't argue that it's not funny, because, I mean,
it is. It's hilarious. It's the little one-liners that aren't meant to be one-liners. It fits in perfectly with Johnny's personality, with his with who he has become. He is completely out of touch with the real world. Like, he's got a little flip phone. He doesn't know what Facebook is. He has absolutely no idea about the internet or anything like that, which fits in with who Johnny is, who Johnny has become. You know, I mean, he's
quite literally stuck in the 80s.
And that's obvious through the way he dresses, the way he talks. Like, he is stuck in high school. He's one of those guys that when you go back to a high school reunion, he is stuck in the fact that he was the star quarterback, you know, and that was the pinnacle of his life. Like, the pinnacle of Johnny's life was the All-Valley tournament and losing. Like, that's where his life stopped. And he just got older. He didn't grow up. He just got older. You know.
Might be messed up, but I'm kind of glad he didn't, because it's funny as hell.
Oh, it's hilarious. It's hilarious because, I mean, some levels I can relate to Johnny because, you know, I'm around the same age. Pretty much same generation. You know, I mean, they're obviously a couple years older than me. But it's the same time period that we grew up in. You know, we all grew up in the 80s and stuff like that. But, you know, I can kind of relate. There are some things that, you know, I don't know about with technology and stuff like that. Like, there are apps that, you know, social media apps that I don't use. I'm still stuck on Facebook. Let me put it that way. I barely use Instagram. I don't use Snapchat. I don't use Twitter. I have a TikTok account to watch TikToks. I don't make content, you know. So in a way, I'm kind of stunted. It's, you know, it's 30 years ahead of Johnny, but I'm not 100%.
You've at least got a smartphone.
I do have a smartphone. Yes, that I do. Smartphone's like 3 years old, but I do have a smartphone.
Yeah. So it's just funny. Little quips and one-liners and just the way he interacts with people and the way he does stuff is hilarious. He has his serious moments, but they're not, like, memorable. It's just the funny stuff just sticks out. Makes him one of my favorite characters.
There's a scene in a bar that he goes to where he's, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he was trying to pick up a younger girl and his lines weren't working. And then he goes to the older woman and all of his lines worked. Like he was, it's still showing that he's still stuck in, you know, in the 80s. He's still got the same car, still listens to the same music, still watches the same shows and movies and stuff like that. Like it's
yeah. It just, he never left the 80s.
Yeah, which is good and bad. I mean, the 80s was a great decade.
Yes.
You know, some of the best movie, music, TV shows, you know, all of that came out of the 80s. But there were some bad things that came out of the 80s. Mainly fashion.
That is not true.
Really?
80s fashion was fun.
Aquanet?
It was fun.
Socks, you know, pulled up over pants.
Okay, well, that was stupid. Leg warmers were cool, though.
The leg warmers were not.
They were.
They were not cool. Hypercolor was cool.
Hypercolor was amazing. The fact that people would get so incredibly offended by it now is sad, because I know I used to... I don't know. Cover your ears, son. I used to walk around high school with handprints on my titties from my friends walking up and doing that because their hands were warm and it was hypercolor. And I, you know, it was hilarious then.
It was. I mean, every girl that wore a hypercolor shirt either did that to themselves or had somebody do that to them.
Yes. And it was funny. Now teachers would be like, that's not appropriate.
That's so offensive.
You know, that shit would be against, like, school dress codes.
Can't wear the hypercolor. Neon was bad, though.
No, it wasn't. Neon was awesome.
Neon shoelaces? Come on.
Oh, I used to rock the shit out of
them. Oh, I did, too, but I'm not saying that it was good. The mullet? The rat tail? Come on.
Some of those stuff are coming back, though.
I know.
The mullet definitely is.
I know. It should stay in the 80s where it belongs. So, I know, Miss Angel, I know you've watched maybe not the full seasons.
I watched one season.
You've watched some of the other episodes with me.
A little bit, but not much.
But you watched the movies.
Yes.
From what you've seen of the show Cobra Kai, going off of the movies, like as a continuation, what are your thoughts on it?
I mean, I think it's a good show. I had a hard time, I guess, getting into it at first. But it's like that first season was super cool because it was very reminiscent. And, you know, you're seeing all the characters from the movies and what they look like now and seeing them as parents. And that was pretty cool. I'll admit that. It is a little funny. I like the little bit of humor that's in there. It is very, I don't know. It's not the greatest show, but it is fun. It's fun to watch. I'll admit that.
Yeah, I kind of have a similar feeling about it. I like it purely kind of based off the comedy and the characters, like the
yeah.
way they play each other. Like, I don't really care about the karate in it.
No.
You know, I live in the real world.
Yeah.
Karate's not lame, but.
But we don't use it every day on the street.
Yeah, we don't take it that seriously in America. You know, we don't have bullies walking around high school with their black belts wrapped around their head, thinking they're hot shit. No, if you do that, you get bullied.
Your sleeves rolled up.
You get bullied if you walk around thinking you're hot shit because you do karate. You can kick my ass, but you look like a loser. But yeah, I mean, it's just a funny show, and it's one of those things that kind of it's sort of like timeless, because like you can watch Cobra Kai and it's got today's stuff mixed into it, it's got older stuff mixed into it, and you can just really watch it. If you're a fan of 80s stuff, you're gonna love it. You're gonna love Johnny Lawrence. If you're a fan of today's stuff, you might like Samantha and Miguel. Who knows? I don't know. I like the show because it's funny and because it doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah. I will say that my opinion of
Johnny?
Well, yeah, but
Daniel
has kind of changed over the course of the show. Like, he's kind of a fucking whiner.
Yeah.
He really is. Like, I have such a complainy, whiny parent. Like, I found, like, a new like for Johnny. Like, what?
And that was honestly the premise of the show. It was to kind of tell the story from Johnny's point of view. And it was really just to kind of look at the entire story, the entire rivalry between Johnny and Daniel from Johnny's point of view. Like I was saying earlier, I don't know if you were in the studio or not. There was a push a while back of people rewatching The Karate Kid and kind of siding with Johnny. They portrayed it a couple times in How I Met Your Mother. Barney is a fan of Johnny and thinks that Johnny was the hero of the story. And it kind of rolls off of that line of thinking because we haven't mentioned it on the show tonight.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, the final move that Daniel made at the end of Karate Kid, at the end of the first Karate Kid, to win the All-Valley Tournament was an illegal move.
Yeah.
So it was yeah, because you're not supposed to kick to the face.
I thought, it was kind of like wasn't a rule. I felt like it was more of a sportsman thing. Like, at the end of a football game, you shake their hand. If you don't, you're kind of the people in the face because it's more of a thing. Like Daniel said, technically the rule said anything above the belt is you go for it. You just don't go for the face because it's the face. It was a cool move, though.
It was a cool move. And he tried to do it again in Karate Kid 2, and it got completely blocked and slapped down and caused him to almost get his ass kicked.
Well, now, if you imagine standing there like this against guys who know what this means.
Well, anybody that's skilled that much in karate and have, you know, been trained since before they could walk in the art of martial arts, you know, in any of the martial arts, especially karate, they're going to know to watch for that. Because
I'm no black belt, but if I got into a street fight with somebody and their first immediate move is this, I'm kicking their ass.
Right?
I know what you're going to do. Unless you just don't kick me and go, "Fa-pow." But if you go like this, do the crane kick motion, and you're up there like this, I'm like, okay, Karate Kid fan.
Right? I know where this is
going. You gotta go for a kick. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to, I don't even have to block it. I'm just going to walk up to you and push you over. Because you're sitting on one foot. You're sitting on one leg with poor balance because you don't know how to do it. Because you're also not a black belt. And you're going to go to do it and tear your hamstring. And I'm just going to let you lay there because you're not a black belt. You're not a black belt. You pulled your muscle in your leg laying on the ground because it hurt. And I won't kick you when you're down because you didn't kick your own ass.
Now, I will say that...
Well, I'll laugh at you and call you a dork. like Johnny Ward. I'm going
to
take the Johnny Ward approach.
The Kray kick on me? Come on now. How stupid are you going to be?
I watched Cobra Kai, man. I know what I'm doing.
Well, I watched The Karate Kid Part 2. I know how to defend against that. So I will say that there was... So throughout the series, Daniel really focuses a lot on the teachings of Mr. Miyagi. You know, karate for defense only is the number one rule. Rule number two is, you know, don't forget rule number one. And he does, you know, the whole, you know, painting the fence, sand the floor, wax the car, paint the house and stuff like that. But one move that they did not bring back that I'm actually kind of surprised and disappointed with was the drum. Did you see that at all in any of the clips that you saw for Karate Kid?
No, I don't remember seeing it.
Okay. Well, when we're done, go back and go on YouTube or actually the movies I think are on Peacock. And if you don't have Peacock, I'll give you mine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're on Peacock. But that's how he defeated Chosen in the Karate Kid 2 was with the drum.
Yeah,
he blocked
they showed the drum in Karate Kid and the Cobra Kai in the flashback.
They did, and I think Daniel still has the drum in his dojo at his house. But it's not a move that he taught anybody, which probably not good for a tournament, which is probably why he didn't teach him. But it's still a pretty good move to use, like, outside of...
They'll probably teach him... Chosen will probably teach the kids when he's of Miyagi-Do.
I hope so, because it's a cool move, and it's, you know, it was really cool to see Daniel do it in Part 2, because he literally beat the crap out of him with that.
Yeah.
Like, he would twist one way and block, come back the other way and punch him, and then block, and then punch him, and... I mean, for the time period, obviously, it's a pretty cool thing to see. And even now, when you watch the movie, it's pretty cool to see. So it's a pivotal moment in that movie that they kind of left out, which is sad to a point. I understand why they did it, but I kind of wanted to see it.
Yeah. One of my favorite parts of Daniel and Johnny's co-sensei thing was Daniel was showing Johnny the moves, teaching him the Miyagi-Do techniques. And then he goes to the plate, he goes, okay, show me wax on. And Daniel just hits him because he didn't block. And he goes, what's a pocket? He goes, what do you mean? You said wax on. And he goes, oh, wax on.
Tight. But so let's talk about Anthony LaRusso for a second.
I was about to say, Daniel's son. Oh, man.
What? An asshole.
He needs his ass kicked worse than he got it kicked. He needs it bad.
He needs some humbling.
Yeah. He's such an awkward kid, too.
He is
the way he runs, the way he does things, the way he stands. He's just an awkward guy. They probably need to recast him, if I'm being honest. It'll be the second recasting of that character. They need to do something, though.
Yeah, they kind of, and I understand
he's not getting paid very much. That none of the budget went to him.
No. Well, he's not a main character, and they kind of excluded him for most of seasons 2 and 3. I mean, he was there, but he wasn't there. You know what I mean? A lot of the focus was on Samantha. Obviously, because, you know, of her rivalry with Tori, but when they brought him into the forefront in season 4, and they made him, you know, the bully kid, it's understandable. Because we see, you know, the lack of attention from Daniel and Daniel's wife, his mother. A lot of the attention is on Johnny and Samantha and this whole rivalry between Cobra Kai and Eagle Fang and Miyagi-Do.
It's a badass name, by the way.
Eagle Fang.
Eagles won't have fangs. Shut up. It's badass.
Eagle Fang Karate. But, you know, it makes sense with him, you know, with the lack of attention that he got, in seasons 2 and 3 to kind of lash out and be the troubled teen, I guess, and finding his place in, you know, in the world of school.
Yeah.
So, but he's just Daniel needs to beat his ass. Is what needs to happen.
Yeah.
You know.
He needs a swift kick to the ass.
He needs some more attention. And he needs a good dose of reality. He needs his ass kicked.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think what I'm probably going to do, at some point before season 5 comes out, obviously, is rewatch all the movies. I'm not sure if they're on Netflix.
The movies, I couldn't find them on there.
Okay. I know they're on Peacock. And like I said, if you need access to that, I've got it. Because last time you were down here, you got access to Paramount. Oh, no, Peacock, that's The Godfathers.
Yeah.
I'll talk to him and see if I can get you access.
Alrighty. If not, it's okay.
But, you know, or, you know, when you come down, we'll watch them. We'll watch them all together.
Yeah.
And then, you know, re-binge all of Cobra Kai. Season 5 hits, obviously. So.
Yeah.
But
I don't know when season 5 is supposed to... Season 4 came out while I was down at your house at Christmas a couple months ago. So
yeah.
We got about a year till season 5.
Yeah, I think it'll hit either end of this year or beginning of next year.
That lines up perfectly, too, because I don't want to mispronounce his name. I assume it's Zolo, X-O-L-O.
That would be my guess, yeah.
He is filming Blue Beetle. That starts relatively soon, I think. It's like right around the corner. Because it's supposed to come out 2023.
Okay.
So... filming takes 6 months. If they start within the next few months, he could be right back on Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I will say that, you know, with all the reboots of, you know, 80s TV shows that are coming out and, you know, these quote-unquote continuations of shows and stuff like that, because we have Saved by the Bell, which is a
terrible
reboot and continuation at the same time.
I think it was 90s.
Yeah, 90s. But it's not as great as it could have been.
What's the difference than Fuller House?
Fuller House, which is the continuation of Full House, which lasted only two seasons, I think.
It was like five seasons.
Was it?
Yeah, I watched all of them. That was like a guilty pleasure show for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I might have to go back and rewatch
it. It's not all too great, but it's a guilty pleasure show for sure.
Yeah, okay. Definitely.
Okay. And then we have the reboot of Bel-Air, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, that just
it's like a complete remake.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be more like serious than like the original show.
The original show had a lot of serious moments.
Mm-hmm, no, I mean more like drama.
Yeah, it's going to be more of a drama show, like Tia said.
Yeah.
Opposed to like the comedy sitcom that Fresh Prince was.
Yeah. And we have a lot of resurgence of 80s cinema culture coming back. You know, we just got the continuation of Halloween a couple years back, and then one released last year.
It's a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, it kind of shows that people can't have an original idea, because most original ideas anymore suck ass. And it's a bunch of studios beating dead horses.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a good thing, though. Not that beating dead horses is a good thing, but
the resurgence.
You know, sometimes it's a good thing. Like with the Halloween, that's a good one. Cobra Kai is a good one.
Yeah.
There's definitely good ones out there, but sometimes you just don't remake everything.
So, and I forgot to mention this at the beginning of the show. I also watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre on Netflix.
Oh, jeez.
It's 50 years after the original, so it's got some of the original cast, one of the original cast. It's crap. And one of the things I was going to say about Cobra Kai is that, number one, the show doesn't take itself too seriously, which is really good.
Yeah, it's not like it makes fun of itself. It's not like, oh, we're losers and we do karate. It's like, it quite literally calls itself out on things. Like,
yeah.
People are like, why do they take karate so seriously here? I don't know, that's just how it is. Or like, people go around saying, yeah, Cobra Kai is the run of the town. This is what it is. And at the same time, when you look outside of their world, it's just normal people doing normal things, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, that's weird, but okay. Do your thing.
But I will say that Cobra Kai was one of those that picked up where the last one left off. You know, where the last set of good movies left off. And just kind of did it right. You know, it brought... So the best thing about Cobra Kai is that it brings the original audience back into it. It brings in a younger audience, like you were saying, and it brings in a younger audience as well, because you have, you know, you have both generations. You have the generation of Karate Kid and then their kids. And it brings them together, and it's something that can appeal to, you know, all the generations, you know, those two generations and all the generations in between. It's got action, it's got comedy, it's got drama, it's got suspense, it's got thrills. It's an all-around good TV series that went off of movies that were very popular then may not have really aged that well because, you know, they were made for that time period. They weren't meant to be long-lasting blockbusters. But they're still relevant movies if you look at the messages behind them. And they're fun movies.
Well, yeah.
You know, they're fun movies, and the TV series is a fun series. They're all fun to watch, and they're ones that you can watch with your family.
Yeah.
You know, so.
It definitely is. It's a show that I kind of like, I stumbled across, because I watched the first thing Dose of Cobra Kai I got was we all watched it down there. We all watched season 4 down there. I was like, I don't care. I'm probably not going to watch this anyway. And then one day it just struck me. I was like, I'm going to watch Cobra Kai. And I just got into it.
So, and I'm actually kind of glad that you did, because
it was out of the blue thing. Because I was sitting there. I was like, I'm so freaking bored. And then a thing of Cobra Kai popped up. I was like, you know what? Why not? I just all the way through.
And like I said, I'm glad you did. I love the Karate Kid series. I love watching the movies. Even now, I love watching the movies. 1, 2, and 3. And the next Karate Kid is not a good movie. And the remake was crap. But Karate Kid 1, 2, and 3 were really good movies. They were movies from the 80s that were done right. And, you know, when Cobra Kai hit Netflix, I had to watch it. I had to see what happened. And I'm glad you enjoy it. I do, because it's, you know, it's the generation gap that you and I have. You know, like I said, can bring my generation and your generation together. It's one of those that does that. You know, there's very few franchises that can do that.
Yeah.
So. All right. We are down to our last few minutes on the show. I want to, as always, thank Alex for joining me tonight, for being here with us. Had a great time, had a great show. Also want to thank Miss Angel for, you know, her little...
My shining presence.
Total of 60 seconds of voice that we heard from her. And I want to thank, you know, all of our listeners, all of our followers, all of our supporters. We do appreciate you guys. I know I've been saying it for a while, but there are changes coming. There really are. And I promise you, Movie of the Week will be back on the air very soon. Going through some changes here and there. Will not be this Sunday, but we are shooting for the following Sunday. So, let's see. So March 6th is what we are shooting for. We're coming back from Movie of the Week. So mark your calendars, people.
Okay. Sorry. I just said something out loud. That was my tag.
Anyway. We will be having a show next week, right?
Yes.
Okay. Don't have a topic narrowed down yet, but we will have one probably by Friday. So, all righty. Please support your veterans, fire, police, and EMS. They're out there every day for you. As always, ladies and gentlemen, please, please be safe, be smart. We want you back here every night that we broadcast on Wiki Curiosity Media. Every Sunday night for Behind the Screen, which will be coming back on March 6th. Every Tuesday night for Falling From Grace. Will you guys be having a show next Tuesday?
As far as I know.
All right. Every Wednesday night for The Cinephiles. And every Friday night for Note by Note. Stay tuned to the Facebook pages. Hopefully here soon we'll be able to be making a couple of announcements on some things that are going to be changing. Check out our TikTok at Wicked Angel. Hopefully we'll be putting some content up there soon. We'll see. But yeah, big things are headed our way this year. So keep an eye out. And on that note, hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your Wednesday night. Have a fantastic week. For WCM, we'll see you back here Friday night. For BTS and the Cinephiles, we'll see you back here next Wednesday night. Y'all have a fantastic night. We love you, and see you later.
See you later.
Goodbye.
Good night. I ended the live stream. So I'm also going to end Blog Talk.
All right.
So, and then I'll hit you up on here.